Mass shootings have become a near daily occurrence in the United States. It's practically becoming the new normal, if that isn't already the case. So far in 2019 alone, there have been a total of 337 mass violence incidents, and that's just in the United States, with 21 or so of those incidents resulting in the loss of life. Sometimes, these mass shootings are opportunistic, or linked to some form of gang violence. But there is a substantial subsection of would-be mass shooters that come to obsess over the idea of committing mass violence and plan for it. Social media, in this connected age we live in, has become a platform for these obsessives to wax poetic about how they've been wronged, and how they plan on taking it out against the world. If not through their own words, through a retweet or a like. It's easy to see the connection between social media and mass shooters. It's predictable, really, as if the compulsions of unstable individuals evolve with the technology around them. Take, for example, the arrest of Brandon Wagschall, Tristan Scott Wicks, and James Patrick Reardon, three very different young men, arrested in the same week in different states, in connection to potential mass shootings, and only days removed from the deadly mass shootings in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio. 22-year-old Brandon Wagschall was arrested in Norwalk, Connecticut, after authorities at the FBI National Threats Operations Center received a tip from Lee Ann Potter, the wife of Melissa Potter, Wagschall's aunt, after Melissa shared to Lee Ann that she received a spontaneous and disconcerting phone call from Wagschall himself. Melissa later explained, quote, "When I saw his name on the caller ID, I got worried that maybe something horrible had happened. Or, you know, maybe something was going on with the family that he needed to tell me about, so I picked up the phone." Instead, Brandon Wagschall told Melissa that he was trying to build an AR-15-style rifle from a build-your-own AR-15 kit he purchased in California. However, he did not have access to the corresponding ammunition. Connecticut has basically outlawed the possession and purchase of large-capacity magazines. That is, magazines that can hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition at a time, since April of 2013. Wagschall was trying to skirt his way around the law by going out of state to New Hampshire and purchasing the high-capacity magazines there. He wanted to use Melissa's address in order to receive the magazines. "I was trying to think of ways to discourage him because I knew this was not a good idea. My heart was racing because I knew what he was asking me just sounded very suspicious," Melissa said, adding that the Dayton and El Paso shootings were still fresh in her mind. Quote, "I was thinking about the mass shootings that have taken place where you see it on the news and read the stories that they have these high-capacity magazines. When they intend to kill a lot of people, they come in with a lot of ammunition, ready to kill." Wagschall, according to Melissa, had turned into the family pariah. In fact, she explained, they had stopped inviting him to family gatherings altogether, due to what she described as his persistent, quote-unquote, scary and odd behavior. Like how he would tell them that he was trying to hack into top-secret government databases. As a side effect, the family even had to stop inviting Joanna Kersen, Wagschall's mother, Melissa's own sister, to the gatherings, simply out of association, a better safe than sorry type of thing. However, after this concerning phone call, Melissa's first thought was to call Kersen, her sister. Joanna didn't answer, but Melissa left her a long and detailed voice message, explaining that whatever Brandon was getting up to, it got her concerned and it left her uneasy. Joanna Kersen, after reviewing the message, then confronted her son, also bothered by the fact that he was trying to purchase high-capacity magazines. She said that she asked him why he needed the magazines, to which he crudely responded, quote, "Because fuck you," unquote. Later, when questioned by authorities on the same subject, Wagschall had a less obscene explanation. Wagschall admitted to officers that he did drive the 3 hours to New Hampshire with purpose to buy the magazines, but he argued, he was only circumventing the unconstitutional restriction placed on his Second Amendment right to bear arms by the laws of Connecticut. And he denied completely planning any kind of mass shooting. Melissa waited about a week after the phone call before she filed a complaint with the Norwalk Police Department. She also contacted her local police station a few days later, just to be safe. In the interim, that's when she explained the phone call to Leanne. Leanne took the situation very seriously, and followed up on Melissa's reports with her own call to the FBI. In fact, Leanne was so concerned about what could develop that she followed up on the phone call after a couple of days to confirm that the FBI were on top of it. With all of the mass shootings, I mean, it became somewhat clear in my mind. This was not an idle thing, Leanne said. She continued, this was not one of those things to be taken lightly, and you don't want to have the death of a lot of people in this kind of a situation on your hands. Melissa's reports and Leanne's complaint to the FBI led to an investigation into Brandon Wagschul's background. Diving into Wagschul's past, authorities could discover that though Wagschul had no apparent criminal record, he had a colorful history of aggressive behavior. They also learned that he had been sent to a psychiatric treatment facility, involuntarily, a little over a year before his arrest, after he had attempted to force his way into a bank in the Stamford area. Scanning through his Facebook profile, authorities found that Wagschul had openly expressed an interest in committing a mass shooting. Planning a mass murder, his activity section read succinctly, in all caps. Wagschul's profile also read that he was a former US Marine and had worked for the Department of Homeland Security as a janitor, both of which were lies, according to Lieutenant Terry Blake of the Norwalk Police Department. Experts who studied Wagschul's social media post after his arrest described his social media presence as clear evidence of self-radicalization. From his mother, authorities learned that the reason Wagschul was building his own rifle in the first place was just in case World War III ever broke out. She had apparently tried her best to wean Wagschul off of his obsession with guns and violence. When he was in middle school, she explained, Brandon had subscribed to a plethora of gun and firearm magazines. She had to personally contact the companies to stop the magazines from being sent out, once reprimanding a representative that, quote, if her son were to commit a school shooting, the blood would be on the company's hands. Now, to some, this may seem like the actions of an overzealous or overprotective mother. Everyone has hobbies, after all, and many people are into guns as a hobby, but she was not being just a paranoid mother. In the sixth grade, Brandon had actually threatened to shoot another student, warning that, quote, he'll make Virginia Tech look like nothing. On top of that, Brandon would later be expelled from high school because he was looking up the cost of a handgun on one of the school's computers. It had become clear to his mother that Brandon's interests were out of the ordinary, and perhaps even dangerous. Following the arrest, a risk warrant was issued in Wagschul's name. Under Connecticut's red flag law, which had been on the books since 1999, this kind of warrant would allow authorities to take possession of an individual's firearm if there is a credible belief that the individual poses an imminent risk of physical injury to themselves or others. With warrant in hand, police raided Brandon Wagschul's apartment, his father's apartment, to be more precise, because that's where he was living. There, they seized a cache of firearms and equipment, including a .40-caliber handgun, a .22-caliber rifle outfitted with a powerful rifle scope and a laser sight, a full camouflage outfit, a ballistic helmet, and titanium-plated body armor. Not to discount the treasure trove of assorted ammunition that he had been hoarding, Wagschul explained that he needed all of that equipment for training purposes. What exactly he was training for, he never elaborated on, but perhaps it was World War III. Wagschul currently remains on house arrest after posting a $250,000 bond. So far, the judge has refused to lower the bond requirements, but has allowed Wagschul some slight semblance of freedom to participate in Jewish holidays and religious services. The other two men I mentioned at the top of the introduction, Tristan Scott Wicks and James Patrick Reardon, were each arrested under similar circumstances and with similar stories to Brandon Wagschul. Wicks, of Daytona Beach, Florida, was 25 years old at the time of his arrest. He was taken into custody by a swarm of police officers that surrounded him while he was sitting in his car that was stationed in the parking lot of a Winn-Dixie. Wicks had been on their radar after he sent his ex-girlfriend a series of disturbing text messages in which he allegedly threatened to commit a mass shooting, which she promptly reported. A good 100 kills would be nice, he originally wrote her, accented by a laughing emoji. He even had a location in mind, according to the sheriff's office. A school is a weak target. I'd be more likely to open fire on a large crowd of people from over 3 miles away. I'd wanna break the world record for longest confirmed kill ever. Wicks also wrote that he wanted to die and quote-unquote have fun doing it. Ironically, he had no clue why he was being arrested, and thought that police were taking him in over an unpaid debt. If he thought that many police officers were needed over an unpaid debt, it makes you wonder what kind of bills he had. Wicks fit the profile of a mass shooter and had the potential to carry out on his threats. According to Michael Chitwood of the Volusia County Sheriff's Department, quote, when you look at this kid's background, he is the profile of a shooter. He lost his job, he lost his girlfriend, he's depressed, he's got the ammunition, and he wants to become known for being the most prolific killer in American history. However, like Brandon Wagschul before him, Wicks did not have a prior criminal record. Authorities would go on to recover a hunting rifle and over 400 rounds of ammunition from Wicks' apartment. Although Wicks initially told investigators that he did not own any firearms, he did, however, admit that he was fascinated with mass shootings, explaining to officers that, quote, there are people in our communities that are motivated to be killers. Wicks currently remains in custody and is being held without bond. His trial is pending. 20-year-old James Patrick Reardon, on the other hand, was caught by chance. Though his social media presence turned out to be his undoing, Reardon had posted a video to his Instagram account that had an unidentified man shooting a gun at the Youngstown Jewish Community Center. It was later determined that the man in the video was Reardon himself. The video was captioned, "Police identified the Youngstown Jewish family community shooter as local white nationalist Seamus O'Reardon." Seamus O'Reardon, of course, was a white nationalist nickname that Reardon had adopted for himself. The video would have gone unnoticed, if not for the fact that a New Middleton police officer was shown the post while he was responding to an unrelated call. The rest of Reardon's Instagram account was full of anti-Semitic comments and glorification of white nationalist content. As a matter of fact, in 2017, Reardon had appeared in a documentary filmed at the controversial white nationalist Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. Reardon, who was only 18 years old at the time, had stated, quote, I want a homeland for white people, and I think every race should have a homeland for their race, unquote. Reardon was arrested without incident and charged with telecommunications harassment and aggravated menacing, both of which he pleaded not guilty to. A month later, he received additional federal charges, including one count of transmitting an interstate communication threat, and one count of possession of a firearm in furtherance of a crime of violence. After a search of his home revealed that he had a stockpile of semi-automatic weapons, ammunition, and bulletproof armor. A Hitler Youth knife was also recovered from his home. While the actions of law enforcement and any and all respective informants in each of these arrests are commendable, heroic even, the arrest and the potential perpetrators themselves have been largely forgotten, lost in the flood of more mass violence incidents and the fast-paced 24/7 news cycle. In fact, since these arrests, there have been at least 74 mass shooting incidents in the US alone, including the Midland-Odessa shooting where a gunman shot multiple people from a vehicle and injured 25 of them. Unfortunately, it's not always the case that authorities get to intervene. It's not always the case that these individuals get thwarted, even when the warning signs are there and apparent. Such is the case in this episode of Resolved. This has been a brief preview for my new podcast, Resolved, which is available now on Patreon. If you would like to hear the rest of the episode, consider heading to patreon.com/unresolvedpod, where you could become a patron and help support this show. All patrons get access to my backlog of bonus mini episodes, as well as commercial-free episodes of other podcasts from Unresolved Productions, including Unresolved and Hoax. New episodes of Resolved will be made available on the 15th of every month, so stay tuned and make sure to check it out if you're interested. Once again, you could find more information at patreon.com/unresolvedpod. Thanks for listening, everybody. Cheers.